I think we'll make a start of this session. I'm Felix Tang. I'll be your chair for this concurrent session. And the title of this session is Risk Management for Insureds, a Trend for the Future. And we have two speakers, Katrina Run and Laurel Kong from KPMG. A brief bio. Katrina is a senior actuarial consultant at KPMG, joined KPMG in 2011 as a graduate, and since have been involved in a broad range of projects and advised Australian insurers, self-insurers and reinsurers. She has also worked on a number of liability valuations, audit supports and peer reviews across a broad range of classes. And Laurel is a partner of KPMG, has worked in general insurance for 17 years. Her work has included valuations, peer reviews, and also other advisory roles across a broad spectrum of products and portfolios, as well as self-insurers and government clients. Laura is an active presenter, has presented a range of forums on topics such as large claims, risk margins, and aging populations. And echoing the themes from this seminar, which is balancing outcomes, the importance of prevention and management of risks have been acknowledged a few times already. I'm sure you have heard of it in yesterday and today. So appropriately, the topic of this session is risk management for insureds, a trend for the future. So please welcome Katrina and Laurel.
Thank you, Felix. Hi, everyone. Welcome to our presentation session. Some time ago, I was just doing some research work for medical indemnity insurers on the internet. I was overwhelmed by the amount of risk management information I can find on their website. What interests me the most was that one of the medical insurers actually provide explicit premium discounts to encourage insurers to participate in risk management program. So I soon shared my observations with Doro, and we decided to look more into this area and turn it into the presentation that you will see today. As you know, risk management is part and parcel of sustaining affordable premiums for insurers and schemes alike. While some risks are managed within the organizations, some are active in promoting risk management at the insurer level. So firstly, we will give you a bit of background of how risk management for insured come into play in the market. We then examine by class of business what's currently available, why it is available, what are the benefits, strengths, and weaknesses of different programs. We explore further by making comparisons across different class of business, and we try to see what opportunities are out there. Now, we'll present here some of the reasons behind risk management. Now, I won't go through them line by line here, but we will look at in more details later why different organizations adopt risk management for insured approach. Now, in practice, there are many options for underwriters to manage their risks. They could decline covers, they could purchase reinsurance, they could adjust their premiums to reflect higher claim costs, or they could just simply work on their internal claims management. But today, what we are really focusing on here is risk management for insureds. It's fully worth noting that for some organizations who offer compulsory classes in particular, a lot of options I've mentioned above may not apply. So risk management for insureds could play a significant role there. There are a number of ways to define risk management. For the purpose of our presentation, we divide it into three levels: risk management resources, risk education, and targeted risk management programs. Risk management resources are materials that can be accessed remotely by insureds. So these might include various guidance informations or website fact sheets, which aim to provide additional information to insureds and to reduce their knowledge gap. Risk education includes conferences, workshops, or just trainings where any insured can elect to attend. These are more interactive ways to raise risk awareness and to increase risk capability of insured. Targeted risk management programs provide more targeted guidance or one-on-one assessment. So typically, they focus on an identified group of risks and try to provide tailored program to them. To get a better understanding of the risk management approach for different class of business, we look extensively at the websites and any reports for a wide range of organizations. We also ask organizations for more information where possible. Now we will go through class by class the risk management approach adopted by different organizations, and I'll hand over to Laurel to talk about workers' comp.
Thank you, Katrina. Can everyone hear me okay? Great, thanks. Now, before we delve into what exactly is on offer in the workers' comp space, we first want to look at the big question that we had, and that's why organisations actually offer these programs. And so, as Katrina mentioned, we did ask various organisations to provide more detail around not just why, but what benefits they saw arising from those programs. So we've sort of combined their answers and summarised them up on this slide, and I'm sure it's to the surprise of absolutely no one that the most common answer that we got was around reducing rates of injury and reductions in cost. Another quite common answer that we got was around trying to improve risk awareness or improve identification of risk. And again, that's sort of a precursor to that reduction in rates of injury or reductions in costs. So that all makes a fair amount of sense. A slightly less common response that we got was around the desire of some organisations, and these are a mix of sort of schemes, potentially government funds, insurers. So a slightly less common response was around whether they felt they had a particular role in offering a broader service to their policyholders than just an insurance cover. There were also some less frequent responses, and I won't go through each of them, but two in particular, I guess, caught my attention. And the first one was around why some organisations didn't actually offer any form of risk management support. So sometimes it was a resource constraint, but there were actually a couple of responses, and I was quite surprised, where workers' comp regulators who didn't have underwriting responsibility said, well, it's not really our role to offer those services. And I guess the implication there is that it then falls back to the insureds to offer that. I was nevertheless a little bit surprised, because I guess I sort of had this presumption that a regulator would be quite interested in sort of OH&S and the prevention side and would want to be involved in that. And I took the step of sort of digging a bit further and looking at the mission statements and the objectives of the various schemes around Australia to try and sort of verify, I mean, was it something in the wording of the question that led to that result? And there did actually seem to be a subtle difference in the wording between, I mean, it's not an absolute statement, there were exceptions, but where the regulator wasn't also underwriting, I felt the wording of those objectives probably lent themselves a bit less to a focus on risk management. There was less emphasis on sort of reducing rates of injury and, I guess, more indirect things around scheme efficiency, if that makes sense. The other answer that I thought was quite interesting, we had one organisation who said that one of the benefits they saw of actually offering training in particular was just raising awareness of the value of risk management programs. And I guess for me, that really clarified that it's not just about offering an approach to risk management or training or resources. It's about getting a message out there to your insureds that it is actually important to participate and getting them to understand what's in it for them. Excellent. Press the right direction. Okay, so if we turn to what's actually on offer in workers' compensation, the first category that Katrina defined was around risk management resources, so materials that are fairly easily accessible. And I guess I was quite pleased to discover that in workers' comp there is an absolute wealth of information out there on typical hazards in the workplace, topical issues, so things like stress claims, bullying, noise-related claims. So there's lots of material out there that I think is quite useful to employers who are trying to understand their risks better and think about what they could do about those. There was some difference in the level of information by state. Without digging a lot more into that, I'd suggest that probably the level of resources available plays a part in what's available there. Some of the more sophisticated websites had sort of information by, say, industry-specific risks, or actually allowed filtering of topics by industry, which I thought was quite useful. There's also some emphasis on thinking about how to communicate that safety message out to different worker groups, and younger workers are a particular focus that appeared across a number of states. Some of them also looked at the challenges of communicating with workers of non-English speaking backgrounds or getting the message out to Indigenous workers. Now, I've also noted here some of the resources that weren't so commonly available. So things like case studies is a different way to sort of illustrate a message, or checklists that allow your employers to kind of self-assess their level of risk was sometimes used, but didn't seem to be sort of widespread or the norm necessarily across workers' comp. The other area I found of interest was that, I mean, there are some topics that aren't necessarily covered across each state, and One particular was around sort of communication or interpersonal skills, and I note that because it is quite a point of difference to medical indemnity, which Katrina will talk to you about shortly. The second area we looked at was risk education, so your training, your face-to-face sort of group interactions. And what struck me in looking at this is that there was a fair amount of interchangeability, if you like, between your risk resources and your risk training and education. And what I mean by that is that there was a fair amount of overlap in terms of the topics that were being covered across those two approaches to it. Now, when I say interchangeable, I think we need to be aware there's different sort of advantages and disadvantages of taking those different approaches. One's going to be available to a wider audience, whereas your face-to-face sort of forums and seminars are going to allow more opportunity for discussion and clarification on points. I did observe that certainly in risk education there were broader topics available, and maybe that's a function of the fact that when you're organising, you know, a forum or seminar like this, you can adapt more quickly to different topics or issues that are emerging. One topic in particular that I did note was sort of health and wellbeing, seemed to be fairly commonly presented at different forums, but wasn't necessarily as well represented in the material available. Now, again, I did find that the opportunity for educational training was fairly widespread across the different states. Again, my feeling was that perhaps there was a bit more on offer in those states that were that had a common organisation that was regulating and underwriting. It could just be a function of the fact that those are also the larger states and you might find there's more resources available there. For one state that I did look at where the regulator didn't also underwrite, there was a comment on their website that if training was of interest, they suggested that you approach a third-party provider or an insurer. So, again, there was that implication that that responsibility wasn't necessarily sitting with them. When I looked at... I didn't look at a lot of third-party provider websites, but I did look at some of the larger insurer websites, and my feeling was that although there was that training available, it wasn't necessarily available in all states. So I think there is some potential there that there's less available in those other states. Looking at the third area then, which is the targeted risk management, I guess the most common approach to this that I could see was site visits or workplace inspections to employers. So that sort of allows that more individualised advice. Now, in most cases, those visits were restricted to a specific group. Offering that to small businesses, for example, seems to be common across most, if not all, states. So that was good to see. Whether or not it was available to other groups sort of varied a bit by state. There were some states who specifically noted that they had programs targeting higher risk industries or poorer performing employers that might be identified through sort of claims experience or premium relativities to sort of industry standards. Not many states mentioned self-insurers, but one in particular did have a program that was targeting that subgroup. And I guess I should also mention the role of insurers here. From what I can see, insurers did offer risk management support, and I guess there it didn't seem to be limited to a specific group. So I think that more open availability is certainly a plus where there are insurers available, insurers operating in that particular marketplace. But certainly site visits weren't the only approach to targeted risk management. Some states really emphasised use of a telephone or email helpline to get that more sort of one-on-one advice or consultation. And there was one state in particular that really emphasised that the one-to-one relationship with the between scheme and employer as an approach to that. And I guess the advantage of that sort of approach rather than your site visits is that it is more broadly available and not necessarily restricted just to a specific subgroup. There are a couple of other approaches that I do just want to touch on, even though they're not necessarily widespread. The first, which I've noted here, is the facilitating an exchange of ideas between insureds. Although some states mention this, for the most part it really meant getting people together at training where they could converse amongst themselves, but there was one state that had a specific mentoring program between larger employers and smaller employers to try and get them to work together for the larger employer to help the smaller employers. Risk management processes. The reason I found this so interesting was that it seemed to be quite a resource-efficient way for a regulator to approach promotion of risk management, because from a fairly sort of small upfront investment from them, pretty much push that responsibility for risk management back out to the employer group. The other area, which I did note, was on the Victorian website, and it's being talked about in this seminar. They have actually taken the approach of approaching workers directly now and doing those health checks. So I didn't note any other state doing that, and I found it quite interesting to hear more about that program yesterday. Now, the one other point I do want to mention here is I mentioned earlier that it's important to, I guess, spell out to insureds why they should participate in these programs. We did ask the organisations whether they offered any explicit incentives to participate, and the short answer in workers' comp was not really. So it really comes down to those implicit premium impacts and possibly some recognition amongst peers. Now, to wrap up workers' compensation, we also asked organisations to self-assess the strengths and weaknesses of their risk management programs. So perhaps not surprisingly, given it was self-assessed, generally speaking, they had fairly positive views of how their programs were performing. Now, I guess you can be a little bit cynical about this. Thinking about it logically, I guess if the program wasn't working well, wouldn't you discontinue it? So perhaps there's some real validity to those results. On the other hand, Felix, my chair, was saying in his session yesterday that sometimes organisations don't want to admit when their programs aren't going well. There can be a bit of an emotional attachment to them. So I guess take the results in that context. On the weakness side, there were two particular answers that were quite common. The first was that the programs could be quite difficult to measure in terms of the impact of them, and I think that's a very common theme with these programs. There was one respondent in particular who said, well, we've got multiple programs, so how would we isolate the impact of this one in particular? The second fairly common response was just that there was more demand for the programs than resources can deliver. And again, I think the fact that we're in a resource-constrained environment and organisations have to make choices about where to best direct those resources is a pretty common feature of the landscape. So with that thought in mind, I'm going to hand back to Katrina, who will talk you through medical indemnity and CTP, and then I'll pop back and summarise.
Thank you, Laurel. Similar to workers' comp, we've asked a number of medical indemnity organisations why they offer risk management at the insurer level. The most common answer we got was to differentiate amongst their competitors. It is actually not surprising to see medical indemnity insurers being more committed to their policyholders, as these policyholders were also their members. Now, beyond the first point, there were other reasons behind risk management, though they were less common. One observation I had was that medical insurers tend to emphasize more on the value of reduction in complaints or claims rather than reduction in incidents or injuries. Personally, I found it quite interesting because it's just it's contrast to workers' comp organizations. For medical indemnity organizations, fact sheets and guidance information are commonly available online. They usually highlight emerging issues with an emphasis on the interaction with patients rather than treatments. So the common topics were telehealth, video consultations, following up, missed appointment, etc. In addition, checklists and self-assessment tools are available. So these tools allow insurers to benchmark their behaviors against others and hence improve their risk awareness. Detailed checklists in some cases are tailored to specialist groups, and general matters such as informed consent or complaints management are also available. In some cases, case studies and information on specific doctor groups may be found in their supporting materials. Moving then to risk education. Small group workshops and webinars that facilitate participant discussions are more interactive ways of risk education. So this workshop tries to engage insurers and encourage exploration of specific issues such as patient health literacy and the use of online communication. Doctors' health and practice management may also be addressed. It is believed that improving doctors' own health can improve their practice. Generally speaking, the topic of these events are not technical in nature, so they are not going to tell you how to perform your medical procedures better, for example. This form of education appears to be provided by others and may be referenced on their websites. Speaking about targeted risk management, in contrast to workers' comp, where Laura just mentioned before, where certain states may offer telephone services line. Every single medical insurer we've looked at offer 24/7 telephone advisory services. It just seems to be a given for medical insurer. The intention is to assist practitioners whenever they need it, at any time, anywhere. So it can act as a risk prevention, so allowing practitioners to seek for advice before taking any actions, and it can be a risk mitigant, because some calls are just an early warning of claims. So in this case, if practitioners can, you know, engage the patient earlier on by giving early explanations to patients, it could potentially reduce the likelihood of getting a claim later. In addition, some organizations have targeted review of doctors' practice. So high-risk claim-prone doctors are identified through their risk profile. So it is a bit similar to the site visits for workers' comp. Trainings or one-on-one practice risk assessment will then be performed to develop recommendations on specific issues. Access to peers are just part of the review. For medical indemnity policies, experience ratings are uncommon. However, special terms and conditions such as requirement for supervision may be applied to insurers with very poor claim experience. In limited cases, explicit premium discounts are offered, but it does seem to be very popular amongst insurers. CPD points in connection with college qualifications are just another incentive measure to encourage participation of these programs. Sometimes there's just no incentives, but it's compulsory for participants to attend these programs to remain in their membership. Compared to workers' comp, it just seems to be a lot of, like, a broader range of reasons for insurers to participate in risk management program. In terms of strengths and weaknesses, medical insurers appear to more readily highlight the challenge of measuring effectiveness around the program, in some cases quoting the challenge of separating out the impact of program from other initiatives. Now, the comment made by one of the organizations around medical practitioner engagement was quite surprising to me, because there just seemed to be a lot of incentives for insurers to turn up to these programs. As far as I can see, risk management program offered by medical indemnity organizations are quite interactive, especially the small workshop group that I mentioned previously. Compared to workers' comp and medical indemnity, CTP claims are different in nature. They are commonly for third parties rather than insureds and have low likelihood of multiple accidents per insured. So therefore, you cannot identify claim-prone insureds at individual level. As a result, risk management approach for CTP tends to focus on campaigns or publications that target to reach broader group with the goal of increasing road safety awareness, influencing attitudes, or just reducing the number of events. Targeted risk management and risk education that focuses on a small size group are just not wide-reaching enough to achieve these goals. In contrast to workers' comp regulators, CTP scheme regulators who do not underwrite risks tend to consider themselves having a role in contributing to the reduction of incidents and the cost impact of road trauma. As part of the risk management approach for CTP, claim research are used to inform public education campaign by examining crash injury types or injury severities, etc. The risk management program focuses on decreasing serious injury and gives priority to areas that incur greatest claim cost. Again, it comes down to the limited resources that Laurel has mentioned previously. So as such, major behavior issues such as drink driving, speeding are targeted. Topics around vulnerable road users such as teenagers, children, or passengers may be found in their supporting materials. More targeted interventions may also occur. For example, trainings are provided to motorcyclists to improve their riding skills, so to reduce their likelihood of involvement in motor accidents. Now, I will hand back to Laura to talk about cross-class comparisons and any opportunities we may have in this space.
Okay, now before I do the comparisons across class, I do just want to touch on what I saw as a bit of a gap I suppose, in the work that we did, and that was that we haven't really looked at risk management in other areas of injury, such as sort of public liability or personal accident covers, and it wasn't that we intended to exclude them. I mean, we just really couldn't find enough information on the topic to really reach any broad conclusions on it. So for those classes that we were able to get information, what we've tried to do is a bit of cross-comparison. So we sort of grouped the different risk management approaches into a few different themes, and then we've applied a fairly judgmental score out of 10 that sort of indicates sort of the strength to which a certain approach was adopted for that class. You'll note that I've treated workers' compensation separately between privately and publicly underwritten because I felt that it was a little bit different. And where possible, we've given CTP a rating, but we don't see a purple bar. That's generally an indicator that we didn't really feel it was a relevant category. It's not indicative of some great shortcoming. And I guess the first observation I had is that the areas where risk management information was most plentiful was actually within CTP, workers' compensation, where the scheme was underwritten by the regulator, so there was the one organisation, and also medical indemnity, private insurers. That one's a little bit hidden by the fact that I've also factored in sort of government funds that have medical indemnity exposures in coming up with those ratings. And what I see as a sort of common feature across all of those is that they're all effectively monoline. So they've got one class of business to deal with, and I guess that's where they funnel their resources into. So perhaps that's not that surprising. Other things that came out of that comparison is that in medical indemnity, the use of things like case studies and checklists seem to be a fair bit more common. Forums for insureds to share ideas are actually in fairly common use across most of the classes. CTP is a bit of an exception. Our observation there was that forums weren't usually targeted at insureds, but more sort of stakeholders or service providers. Health and wellbeing was a bit of a mixed bag. That's received a bit of attention at this conference, but it wasn't sort of consistently used, but sometimes across the different schemes and classes. And finally, I think as we've already mentioned a couple of times, in medical indemnity, what they term risk management is very focused around interpersonal issues between doctor and patient and how that doctor-patient relationship works, whereas in workers' compensation, I guess I saw the parallel as being employer-employee interactions, and that sort of seemed to be a smaller component of the focus there. Now, we rated targeted risk management a little bit differently. I've used a simplified scale here. As Katrina mentioned, it wasn't really relevant to CTP, so we haven't tried to include that here. And I guess our conclusion is that the individualised support does seem to be available across most of the organisations we looked at, so all or nearly all. Where site visits are available, they do tend to be restricted to a high-risk or either limited group, with the exception potentially being sort of insurer clients and some smaller workers' compensation states where presumably a smaller number of employers makes it easier to make it more broadly available. The use of sort of telephone lines or other one-to-one support, as we mentioned, pretty much a given in medical indemnity, but mixed across workers' compensation. And finally, facilitation of peer support. Not a common approach to it, but worth mentioning because in some cases it seemed to be almost a replacement for actually giving direct risk management support. So look, there's certainly a lot of information out there around risk management, and I think it's been very difficult to do that justice in what's a relatively short presentation. But what I've tried to do here is do a bit of a sum up, focusing more on comparisons across the classes. So I've tried to look at each class of business as a whole, not drilling down to organisation level, have a look at what seemed to be the strengths there, and then highlight a couple of gaps or opportunities. So in workers' compensation, as I've noted earlier, there's a lot of information and material, and I thought that was a positive. Having said that, there are actually quite common topics and issues being covered across the state, so perhaps there's some opportunity for efficiency there rather than having multiple different jurisdictions putting time and effort into developing that material. I thought also there was quite a clear understanding of what the emerging issues were to target, and I appreciate that working out what the issue is a little bit different to effectively mitigating it, but nonetheless I saw that as a positive. In terms of the gaps and opportunities, as I mentioned, it wasn't always clear to me for states where there was separation between regulator and insurer exactly who was taking on that responsibility for risk management support and whether there might therefore be variations in what was available by way of support to employers in those states. And the other area, I just found it interesting that there was that lesser emphasis on the interpersonal skills. And there's been discussion during this seminar around the rise of things like stress and psych claims. We've had discussions around inquiries into bullying. I found a great case study on, I think, the WorkCover Queensland website that was talking about the importance of the employer keeping touch with the worker as they were having doubts about returning to work, but keeping up that contact sort of improved their confidence in returning. So I think there are a number of interpersonal issues in workers' compensation. I wonder if that might be an area to look at more in the future. Now, having said that, I think it was Paul O'Connor who said yesterday that if you start to get involved in some of that stuff, you could be accused a bit of getting into HR's territory. I'm probably paraphrasing him terribly. So perhaps there's a limiting factor there. For medical indemnity, again, I think there was a clear understanding of what the emerging issues were, and I thought it was great that medical indemnity insurers have such a commitment to their policyholders to support them across various aspects of their professional careers. What was less clear to me is whether there's a similar level of activity going on in government funds that have a range of different responsibilities. It may just be that the information wasn't available, but yeah, that wasn't particularly clear. The other thing, I guess, about medical indemnity is, if it hasn't already been apparent from what we've said, the focus there seems to be around, although it's a doctor-patient relationship, it's sort of, you know, did you highlight the risks to your patient prior to the procedure and, you know, what was your response afterwards when there was an adverse outcome? And my feeling was that it was probably less around preventing the adverse outcome than around thinking about what the response to that adverse outcome should be. So perhaps one thing that medical indemnity could learn from workers' compensation is, you know, to think a little bit more about the preventative side. And maybe that sits outside your medical indemnity insurer's responsibilities. Maybe that's sitting over with the medical colleges. But it was something where there didn't seem to be particular effort. Maybe the nature of that class of business. Finally, we have CTP. I did think it was a particular strength that regardless of who was underwriting the risk in each state, there was seemed to be a clear feeling of responsibility that the regulator was going to promote road safety and try and reduce road tolls. Now, on gaps and opportunities, I must admit, I found it quite difficult to find what CTP could take from the other classes simply because a different approach does apply. I guess where I got to in the end was that if the aim in CTP is to try and get your message out to as wide an audience as possible, maybe it's about looking at the various web tools and approaches and working out what could be adapted. But that's probably a good time to sort of come to my final point. And I think if you're an organisation trying to work out what to make of all the different risk management approaches out there, I think the ideal would be to do a cross comparison both within your class of business and then also across to those other classes. Perhaps perform a bit of a gap analysis, and once you've identified those areas of difference, think about those different approaches to risk management and whether or not they might suit your organisation, whether they could be adapted to your needs. So that's really the ending of the technical content, but I do just want to pause to acknowledge the numerous sources that we relied on in putting this together and say a particular thank you to those organisations who supplied us with additional information. Thank you. Does anyone have any questions?
Thank you, Laurel. Thank you, Katrina, for the for the very good presentation, almost prophetic on the trends that we are seeing emerging in across various classes on risk management, and we're almost talking about influencing a culture to instill you know, awareness of risk management within the you know, within the insured population. So we have a few minutes to take questions from the floor. If I can start with one. So I think obviously we have seen, you know, for the classes that you have researched, there are different approaches to doing sort of you know, the risk education and instilling the risk management culture within the insured. Do you see, or can you give us some insights on, do you see some kind of a trend emerging in terms of convergence of practice, or even common principles, like consensus on the principles of how best to do it?
Do you mean within a particular class of business, or across the different, I'll call them industries?
I think
that's all insurance.
A bit of both, which is, I think you already touched on whether a particular class is taking the lead. For example, you know, maybe due to the nature of the class, they need to think more about the risk management aspects of it has some sort of major impact on claims experience, but any insights that you have?
I don't know that I feel that a particular class has taken the lead. I think within compensation classes, often one state will come up with an idea and they'll progress and develop that and report back. And I think there's probably a fair amount of states looking at each other to understand what else is going on out there and conversing. And clearly there's sort of the heads of workers' compensation meetings and similar for CTP to try and exchange ideas and understand what might be working. I don't know that in the medical indemnity space there's quite so much exchange of ideas because in that scenario they're competitors, but I'm sure they keep a close eye on each other. Whether or not people are looking across to different classes, I'm not sure that I've really seen a lot of that, although I've tried to look at whether classes could learn something from each other. You've also got to bear in mind that there's sort of a different landscape, if you like. I mean, I think part of what drives what goes on in medical indemnity is the fact that, you know, when there's an adverse outcome in a procedure, there's quite a grey area around whether or not that's actually negligence on the part of the practitioner, and therefore whether it should be an insurance claim. Whereas if you come over to workers' compensation, I mean, it's a no-fault scheme. So, you know, if it's a workplace injury, well, it's a workplace injury. So I think sometimes there's sort of these grey areas that can drive the differences, and that may well provide partial justification for why there's that different focus. But I still think it's worthwhile to get an understanding of different approaches. I think also, if I'd had more time, another area that would be interesting to look at is what's done globally. So we've sort of chosen a particular scope in what we've looked at, but I think that would be quite interesting to look at further.
Hi, Cathy Wu from Suncorp. I was just wondering, I guess, a couple of things that you mentioned was that, you know, one of the reasons why there might be gaps is because of lack of resources, and then some of the issues with some of the places was that they found it difficult to justify spending or measuring the impact. Did you come across any organisations that were very good at measuring the impact of allocating resources or to risk management and, you know, deciding where to put that money in? Because I guess, in terms of, from an organisation point of view, there's always limited resources, and you can spend it on claims, you can spend it on underwriting, whatever. Where does sort of risk management fit?
We didn't have organisations who said that they couldn't justify their programs. I mean, we asked them to nominate strengths and weaknesses, so I think they were saying it was difficult to measure, but I didn't get the impression that meant they weren't offering it. I mean, these were in relation to programs that they continued to offer. When we did ask them to assess strengths, some of them were quite qualitative, and what we saw were fairly qualitative responses. Others were able to actually nominate statistics that had improved as a result of their programs. So we didn't get a lot of information around sort of numerical ways of trying to measure that from that process, unfortunately. So probably not able to help you much there. But again, I agree. I think, you know, with more time, it'd be interesting to try and delve further into that and go back to those organisations and see how they were measuring it. Because I was actually surprised that a number of organisations were actually saying, oh, yeah, the quantitative impact of the programs is a strength. So I was sort of like, oh, OK, well, I would have thought that would be difficult to measure. So I think great follow-up.
And I'm sure there are, like, other secondary benefits in terms of branding and, running driving schools and things like that. Sort of there are other platform benefits in terms of claims experience, which is more direct, as well as other branding considerations to think about. Thank you for the very interesting presentation and the discussions and questions that we have from the floor. Would you please join me in thanking Katrina and Laurie in the usual way, please.